This tape's going to be a little on the history of one of the great books, and then a continuation of some of the history after the great book was stopped writing into. Okay, the great book just happens to be the Bible. This book is nothing more than a law book of the laws of how mankind has operated and is to be operating in society. I'm going to start the story not at the very beginning, but it should really start at the very beginning, because a little bit from the very beginning is that we, the people of the planet Earth, were given dominion over the Earth for our benefit, to gain knowledge and understanding. All the resources that were at the disposal of mankind were to be belong to the people, not to a select number of people, but basically for the people to gain knowledge and understanding, so that when one generation passed on to the next generation, and basically the seeds came up again in a distant generation, they would have the wealth that they had brought forth in the previous lifetime to their benefit in the next go-around. It was supposed to be an ongoing cycle. It's a circle of life. Basically, life on the planet Earth. And we, the souls, are basically what was put here. We are not, the souls are not the body. The body is of the Earth. And we came forth and we brought that body to life, to operate on the surface of the Earth. The souls basically are unseen, just like another term, God, is unseen. Not to be seen. Nobody, as far as I know, in recorded history has ever seen their soul. Nobody in recorded history has ever supposedly seen God. They say they've heard God, they felt Him, but they never said that they actually saw exactly what the heck He looked like and was able to put it down and say, this is what He really looks like. So, the whole scenario is that the God that everybody thinks is really your soul, your individual soul. So, now we're going to pick up in the Bible around Abraham. Abraham lived in, I think it was Assyria. He was there with his father. He did not like. He started to understand how the money changers in Assyria were operating. He tried to get his father to break away from the money changers, but his father would not. So Abraham stuck with his father until his father died. Then he left with the people that basically he had. The younger people, the yuppies or whatever you want to call them, back in his day. The people that basically knew that something was wrong and basically did not want to continue into the system the way it was. So they left town. They went out, and then basically Abraham was now out in an area off by himself with his followers and basically with his family. He supposedly had a whole bunch of sons. The youngest one was named Joseph. And Joseph basically was getting a lot more of the knowledge, past knowledge, of what had transpired, because he was at home and he was sort of the protected little one, while his older brothers were out basically operating in commerce the right way. Now see, little Joseph was operating the way of the money changers that his father had tried to get away from. He was conniving, sneaky, deceitful, and all the good qualities of a good money changer. He took off and basically tried to get his brothers into that type of system. They didn't want to have anything to do with it. So basically they got rid of him and sold him off, supposedly, but I don't think so. I think that he just went off on his own and went over to the Pharaoh. He was able to convince the Pharaoh that he should be able to do these things. So the Pharaoh basically listened to him and started hoarding up. He had a bunch of slaves. He was able to do that. So he hoarded up. And then along comes the drought, and basically Joseph's brothers turn around and they need some supplies. They ran short. They did not rotate their crops the way they should have. They overgrazed their land and had too many cattle. Just like a lot of farmers here in this country are doing today. So, they, to keep the herds and the crops in production, they had to borrow. So they went to the Pharaoh. He had a bunch of supplies. They borrowed from him. They signed over basically their promised lands over to a contract with the Pharaoh, the money changers that Joseph had set up. Joseph was bringing the money changers back into the system under the Pharaoh. It was not good little Joseph, the coat of many colors story that everybody wants to believe. It's the exact opposite. I'm not telling this story with any hate or anything. I just despise the false teachings that these people have put out. I guess you might say it is hate then, I guess. So, I hate when basically people are able to be deceived so easily without looking beneath the covers to find out what's there. What is hidden from sight? So, that's what happened with Joseph and his family. They got into basically not a slave servant, but a servitude to basically come back and pay off the debt that they owed to the Pharaoh. Well, that debt continued on for 210 years. At least 210 years. The people didn't know that the debt had been paid off for within about the first 3 to 7 years. But they continued to pay, thinking that that was what the contract really had. They were given funny money in return and basically spending it like it was real money. While the whole time the Pharaoh was keeping the real money in a treasury that was located upon the top of the Great Pyramid. That was the capstone of the Great Pyramid. Basically, the last three layers of the pyramid were all solid gold. That was the treasury of the Pharaoh, sitting right out in plain sight. What better vault than a pyramid so massive that no one could scale it successfully and come back down with anything? Because after the pyramid had been built, the treasury was deposited into the vault. Basically, they took and slicked down the walls leading up to it, so no one could really scale it. They would have to build like scaffolding to be able to try and get up there. Well, during the night's time, no one could build a scaffolding that fast to get up there and take the gold away. So it was an impossibility even for the best bank robbers to take it away. So what happened to it? Well, Moses came upon the scene, and basically he understood what was going on. And he basically objected to the way the Pharaohs were treating the Hebrews and not paying them justly. He was an outcast by that knowledge, so he fled. He fled because he feared for his life. He didn't really kill anybody. He just basically was trying to bring forth the truth. But it weighed upon him, and basically his good conscience got the best of him, and he had to go back. He said, I can't leave these people into that system without trying to help them. So he went back. He confronted the banksters, the lawyers, the money changers, and the government of the Pharaoh. He cast down the truth. They cast their words down, which were false. He disproved them by the law, the real law. And he warned them that basically, if things did not happen, he was going to have the word put out, and basically everything would start tumbling down around them. Well, the Hebrews were basically the servants, or the in servitude. They were the housemaids, acting as housemaids, acting as different things. They basically stopped being the cooks, they stopped being the gardeners, the caretakers for the Pharaohs. They basically went on strike. Things started going against the Pharaohs. Their children were starving because they were not getting fed, because the Pharaoh did not know how to cook. They didn't know a lot of this stuff on their own. Disease and stuff like that set in because they weren't the doctors any longer. The real doctors. Of course, they had their quack doctors, but we've got them too today. So finally, the Pharaoh said, okay, take your money and get the hell out of town. So they built and basically tore down the access, or opened up the access to get up to the treasury. They took the treasury, which was the people's money all along. It was their labor money that was deposited on top of the pyramid. So the Hebrews all took that and left town. Now the Pharaoh didn't like that, so he kept chasing after them, because he liked to look out there and see that gold every morning when the sun rose. It just glistened. And with his ego and arrogance, basically, his pridefulness, he claimed that it was his. just like all the bankers do today. They look at their books and say, this is mine, this is mine. Look how rich I am. Not knowing it all already belongs to somebody else because they have mindset convinced themselves it's really theirs. So they left town. The people liked the system, and so they wanted to try and go back into that type of system amongst themselves. Moses tried to say, no, you're going to use exchange. You're going to exchange what you have for something else. When you make an equal exchange, so much of this just weights and measurements for so much of this on the other side. An ounce of gold will buy a cow. An ounce of gold will buy a good cloak, a bed, a meal, and a bath. Something of equal value. So everybody was to be given their share of what was taken off of the mountain. It was divided up equally. Because the records basically weren't all probably as well as they are today, but they did that. Okay, so they went off, but the people wanted to go back to the system, so Moses kept them out in the desert for 40 years, trying to teach them how to operate. So you don't need to have the need to say, I've got money. Look what I've got. Basically, Moses converted all that gold into white powder. There is another item that the white powder has that is more useful than just a shiny object. A lot of that was stored in the Ark of the Covenant. That became a big capacitor. That's why it was carried upon long wooden poles. Anybody that came close to it, basically, the electrical charge that was created out of that capacitor would have killed anybody. That ark is still hidden away. Now, the people moved out, they set up cities, basically, then they set up some territory, came in, and there's a lot of killing and maiming going on throughout the biblical history from that time forward, up until even to the present day. All of those wars were perpetrated by the religious leaders, by the money changers, by the ones who stood to make a profit or a gain from such an endeavor. But they were never the ones that were out front doing the killing or the maiming. They were always in the background, egging the other people on. Oh, this group is so bad that they're out to destroy you. You better take care of them first before they come and attack you. Type scenario. Now, you can try and prove me wrong on that, but basically history has documented that well time and time again. The people got right back into the system, but basically, there was another system that was sitting across the street. And they were a little more up on how to handle it a little better than the Hebrews were, which now became the Israelites. And those people with their arrogance, the Israelites, basically bought right into the Babylonian banking system that was set up just a little better than theirs was. So they got in the debt. Now Daniel basically understood the banking system. He stayed out of it, so he was not indebted to the Babylonian bankers. And the other people were taken off into servitude again to pay off their debts. The time frame for this servitude was 30 years. As soon as that was completed, Daniel came back to the emperor and said, the debt has been fully paid. The people that wanted to go back to Israel could. The other bunch of them liked the hanging gardens of Babylon and all the beauty that Babylon had to offer, so they stayed there. Daniel tried to convince the people to come out of it. He knew they were going to get right back into the same scenario. And then you have down to the eons, up to the time of the man called Jesus. Now, did Jesus have all this knowledge and everything thrust upon him at his supposedly great birth? No. He got it basically because his uncle was a merchant and basically had a fleet of ships. He was sailing in and out of Rome and England, bringing tin from the mines in England. But that's not the whole story. His ships were going across the Atlantic Ocean also. Jesus, basically, you never hear anything about his life from the time he was 12 until the time he turned 30. That's because he was out of town. He was not there. He returned, basically, when he was 30, back to his home port of Nazareth. And then, basically, he ran into his cousin, John the Baptist. Now, John the Baptist, basically, from what I've found out, was a pretty wealthy individual. He was an insider into the priesthood. He owned oil fields. That basically, and yes, they used oil back then too for different properties of lighting and fires and everything else. We're not all the smartest individuals and all of a sudden we know what to do with oil here. No. That substance has been on the face of the earth for thousands and thousands and thousands of years, and mankind has basically broken down a lot of the different properties of it way before the Rockefellers and the J. Paul Gettys ever once discovered any of the oil fields here in this nation. So, when Jesus ran into John the Baptist, John the Baptist, basically by being an insider, told Jesus the inner workings of how the system, the money changer system, worked in